We're speaking with Brian Averill. He's one of the owners of Averill Hospitality, which now owns the Best Western Edgewater Hotel at City Beach and has plans for a major rebuild of the hotel.
Brian, thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
The proposal has undergone some iterations. The most recent proposal from the company to either buy or lease the RV property that's across Bridge Street from the hotel was the subject of a hearing by the Sandpoint City Council, where a few dozen residents, I'd say, voiced rather strenuous objections to it. And I want to circle back on that. The council at that meeting voted to reject a lease or sale of the RV park and is planning to have a workshop, which I just actually got the date on. It's going to be December 13th, which is a Saturday. It's going to be held at the James E. Russell Community Room, the Sports Center Community Room there. That's December 13th. But the council voted to reject a lease or sale of the property, and they're now going to have this workshop to discuss how that property should be used. So we'll get into that quite a bit later, but let's back up and get some information to give a fuller picture. And I think it's kind of a chance to introduce yourself here. Brian, who is Averill Hospitality? I know your family's been in Whitefish in Montana for several generations, but tell us your story.
Yeah, well, thanks, Chris, for the time. And okay. I appreciate it and look forward to talking through all these components of the development and how we can be a good member of the community and all that. But Averill Hospitality is it's a small family owned and operated hospitality company. We're located in Whitefish, Montana, but we got our start in hospitality a long time ago at a place called the Flathead Lake Lodge, which was started by my grandfather. It's a really unique property that it's a dude ranch by category, I guess, or classification, but it really operates as a big Western resort with horses and sailboats and whatnot, but a very traditional family experience. And all my family got their experience in the hospitality industry growing up at the ranch, and we fell in love with the hospitality business and kind of all the components of it. And I went on to study hospitality and make it my career and my focus. And I reflect back to my time at the Flathead Lake Lodge, and it's created a lot of the things that I hold very important today as we run different hotels and resorts, and it's created the values and how we do what we do today. But unique experiences and personalization is kind of at the forefront, and there's a place for that in hotels and resorts, and they thrive very much so in dude ranch environments where the guests return year over year and whatnot. So I've let that be a big part of our company and how we run things, but we have a lot of staff members that work with us today, but it's still very much a family environment and culture that we've grown with. And so, we're excited to be a part of Sandpoint. We purchased the Best Western Edgewater going on 3.5 years ago. So I've had the fortunate opportunity to spend many nights in Sandpoint, wake up with that beautiful sunset on Lake Ponderay, which is stunning. And I know everyone in the community loves and cherishes that very much. So we're looking forward to doing something with that property that can take advantage of that and protect it at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about your family, because you've been in Montana for, is it 5 generations?
Thanks for asking. My father, I think there's 4 generations on the 5th on my father's side and the 6th on my mother's side. So they've been in Montana for a little bit.
Well, you know what? The image that comes to me, to mind to me, is Yellowstone, that movie, that TV show. Did your folks come as ranchers, or your first ancestors there?
On my father's side, his family came down through Canada, and there was a big sawmill in Somers, and worked at that sawmill, and my grandfather went off to World War II and flew planes in World War II. That's what he had this dream of being a pilot, and like so many people in that era, and flew kind of around the world, and we have some great stories about his different adventures and scary adventures being a part of the war. And but when he came back, he there was a kids camp that went broke in the Depression, that had two big lodges on Flathead Lake. And when he came there, he sought that property out and purchased it, which he ultimately turned into the Flathead Lake Lodge. And in the beginning years, he was unable to operate it as a dude ranch, but it was a supper club. He did some guiding and outfitting in the Bob Marshall, which is the big wilderness in Montana. And then slowly over time, he was able to achieve his goal to turn it into a guest ranch. And his idea was to give people from around the country the experience of a Western lifestyle when they came to Montana. And and it's kind of held true today. The resort still is very much has that same Western heritage and whatnot today. But on my mother's side, she her family all grew up in Butte, Montana, and worked with the Andacona Company.
So it currently involved in the family or yourself. I think I've seen your brother Chris is involved as well, and your father Dan. Is it kind of all family members that are running things?
Yeah, pretty much. My brother Sean, and my father Dan, and then my mother's Lori Averill, and Sean has a great real estate company, Pure West. They just opened an office in Sandpoint a little bit ago, and there's a great guy leading that office in town there. And then Dan is involved in what's going on in Sandpoint quite a bit. And then I kind of generally oversee the hotel operations and a lot of the development that we do too.
Okay. So the other properties you have are there's the lodge at Whitefish Lake. I think you referred to that already. You have a hotel called the Firebrand, which is in downtown Whitefish. There's the Whitefish Riverfront Hotel. I don't have a good picture where that's at. And I kind of know the lake, but that must be on the river. And then in Missoula, you have the Edgewater DoubleTree, which is on the Clark Fork River. Not called the Edgewater. I mean, like ours, the same name as the one here for, but obviously different hotel. So it's in Missoula. And then you have restaurants as well.
We do. We have a number of restaurants too.
Okay. And then I did see a reference on your website to the Missoula Riverfront development. That sounds like something that's in process right now.
It is.
What is that going to be?
A hotel conference center.
Okay. Is that also on the Clark Fork, I presume?
It is. It is
Yeah.
in the Clark Fork.
Okay. And here, the Edgewater, which I correct me if I'm wrong, but or you're tentatively calling it, at least tentatively, this Sandpoint Lakeside Resort at City Beach. Is that the name you settled on there?
Well, we really haven't wanted to settle on any name, but just as an internal reference, as we kind of go through the process, that's what it is. But we would typically go through a branding and then kind of announce the name at a little bit later date. So I think that one's just kind of a temporary placeholder for the moment.
Okay. Well, we'll call it the Sandpoint Lakeside Resort for our purposes at the moment, working name. So let's dive into your plans for that property. I thought I'd give a little bit of history here. So the site of the Edgewater has provided lodging for tourists since the 1940s. There were some cabins where the Edgewater is now. They were called the Lakeshore Tourist Park. at that period of time. And then a smaller hotel was built there called the North Shore. That was purchased in the 1960s by Robert Cox, who expanded it to the Edgewater Resort, which was operated by his company, Sandida. Robert Cox was a prominent member of the community. And then his son, Alan, took the reins of the Edgewater after him. But Alan was tragically killed in a car wreck in 1995. I did know Alan just very little. I had a few chances to meet him way back in the early 90s. After that, the ownership of Sandida and the Edgewater went to Alan's five children. Adrian Cox was probably the one that's doing most of the operations for there. So the Edgewater Hotel had been owned since the 1960s by three generations of a local family, the Cox family. And to give more context here, the Cox family was working on plans to do a big rebuild themselves of the Edgewater. In 2019, they proposed a land swap for that grassy lawn area in front of the hotel, which was owned by the city, for that RV park property that's across Bridge Street from the hotel. And that trade, which I will say had both supporters and opponents, was finalized in 2022. But to clarify, because it's been repeated a few times erroneously, the city traded its lawn area, which extends down to the sidewalk that fronts the hotel there, but that doesn't include the sandy beach, so the waterfront is still a city property. But the trade does give a lot more room to have a substantially larger hotel there when you get that built. And then, as you referenced, I believe your company purchased the Edgewater in 2022. And we had a story on you, and my day job is with Sandpoint Magazine. The original plan for the new hotel was released in the summer of 2024, and it was envisioning 181 hotel rooms with a 300-person conference center, two restaurants, a pool and a gym, possibly some retail spaces inside, and a parking structure with 240 spaces. Estimated cost at that time was $100 million or maybe more. That's a big investment, and I assume there's not some big potential risk with that. But you've since changed the plan. So now the plan, as I understand it most recently, is to add some condos, 27 condo units, but reduce the number of hotel rooms to 99. I guess first question is kind of go through plans for the hotel. What was the rationale behind changing the number of hotel rooms and adding the condos?
Well, it's a good question. It's somewhat of just a mix of how the project can come together and its cost and how do you do all the financing side of it. Condos, you know, people hear that word and think it's a luxury condo. And in our case, it's a little bit different. If we do finalize with that route, it's if we do that, they function and they look just like a hotel room. And so the basis behind, you know, the economic driver for the community is still the same, even though it would have an individual owner in that unit. So it makes a great investment piece. It makes a great vacation piece for someone to come. But it functions just externally as just a hotel room.
So the condo units would kind of be in a rental pool?
Right.
Owners aren't there using it themselves.
Yeah, and they can, but it has a rental component to it. And so they're attractive to people like that want that, and then it functions as a hotel as well. But we're, mm-hmm. you know, those things float around a little bit, and they're still floating around a little bit. But I think the number of units is where we've landed on, which we did that to some degree just to bring the overall volume of the project down, which is helpful. It makes it a little bit more scalable for the community and the site and the parking and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One thing I think that the other people in the tourism hospitality business were really interested in is the fact that you're planning to build a pretty good sized conference center there, Will reducing the number of hotel rooms impact the ability to have, or will you reduce the size of the planned conference center, or would that stay pretty much the same?
Yeah, no, it would stay the same. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And the conference center is really important to the hotel, important to the community. It, you know, drives the occupancy outside of the you know, the typical summer season. So we'll be that economic driver in the community. And the rooms, the ratio of rooms to size of conference spaces is still in line with, you know, industry standards. So it'll support that. Plus it'll support, you know, Sandpoint as a community doesn't have a large facility to hold local events and charities and so on and so forth, and so this facility can do all that at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the hotels have this unique role in communities that they are usually the home base for charitable events and local nonprofits and fundraisers and you know, those type of events and activities. And they, the, you know, having a great facility like that spurs those things and spurs the, you know, funding for those things. And I think the community is very used to using that lawn out in front of the hotel, which all that, those are really normal components, early in the properties that we have. We host a whole number of different community events on property. And they turn out to be really great because the staff, you know, we have the staff and the facility to, and the party planning, event planning, you know, knowledge to do all that stuff. So it's really regular what we do day in, day out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and plus a conference center like that can help bring visitors to town during off seasons.
Absolutely.
Since we have a, you know, pretty big off season here. That's one of the things that the people in the hospitality industry have been interested in, bringing people in during those big shoulder seasons we have. So one of the other changes from the original plan back in 2024 was the reduced parking, and the city reduced the parking requirement in exchange for a in lieu fee to the city. And I'm not sure where that stands. You know, the original plan was for 240 parking spaces. What is the current number of on-site parking spots that you're going to provide, having, you know, arranged for this in lieu of fee?
That's a good question, Chris. I'm somewhat of the, so today the hotel has a plan for a little over one-to-one space. So one space for every hotel or unit in the project. And that's kind of the industry standard norm across the country. Some municipalities go up and down from that, give or take a little bit, but that's basically what the planning purposes are. We find in practicality that properties need, you know, don't need the one-to-one necessarily, because of transportation that's provided by the resort, so on and so forth. But nevertheless, there's a one-to-one ratio that exists today. And we've, you know, talked over with the community folks, a number of different folks, and I've done this personally, that, you know, that everyone's worried about parking and worried that the hotel is going to impact parking at City Beach. And because of that, we're saying, well, we have the one-to-one ratio. That's perfectly fine for our needs. But just in case, and for the benefit of everyone, we'll go out and secure a place in town for emergency overflow parking, just in case. And we've done this. We've entered into a letter of intent to lease some offsite parking. I don't know if we'll actually need it or use it, but nevertheless, in the beginning, we'll have that just in case. But our intention is not to use parking at City Beach. We don't think we need it, and we don't want the community to feel like that's what our goal or our needs are at all. There is an in-lieu fee, which is a great complement to the city, and they can use that to improve City Beach or other parking facilities in the community. But I think our parking is perfectly adequate on site.
Is that in-lieu fee paid one time or is it annually?
It's a one-time.
It's a one-time. I think I saw it reported at $400,000. Is that accurate?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're going to have like a satellite lot, and would that entail having a shuttle that might bring guests or possibly employees? Is that where will employees park?
Oh, they'll park on site. Yeah. And the satellite, this off-site parking is just a pure emergency backup, which our staff could park there. We could valet cars there. We could transfer them back and forth. We could, it'll function like that. It's not the hotel guests or restaurant guests coming to the property won't use or use the parking facility. It'd be more back of the house for us.
Okay. Well, that's been one issue that's been in the media here. Another one is local impact fees. And the city was considering in September to raise local impact fees that hadn't been increased here in the city for 13 years. But Avril came back with what some of our community members considered to be kind of an ultimatum, that if the fees were increased, it would make the project, quote, unviable. Now, the fee increase was pretty substantial since you're talking about a big project. The increased fee would, the projection I saw, please correct me on these numbers, I'm sure you know better than I do, would raise Arrow's payment from an estimated $300,000 to over $1 million, the number I saw. And what the upshot of this decision in September was that the city would put off raising the fees until January to give Avril more time to apply for its conditional use permit. What's the status at this point? Are you going to be able to get your conditional use permit in before those fees jump up? And if they do jump up, is that going to make the project unviable?
Well, you're right. And I you know, some of these, we might be the mouthpiece for some of the development community in Sandpoint, but I think it's probably not just us that are, you know, faced with these same challenges or cost increases. But what I think the ask was less about us specifically, even though it included us, but it was just in general, if projects are entitled and moving through their plans and documentations, then you phase the implementation of the new fees, because a lot of projects have financing already determined, and you know, a lot of development dollars spent as they're just about to submit for their building permits, which is where the impact fees would come into play. And so it would kind of change everyone's outlook, you know, right as they're about to cross the finish line for those increased costs. And I think that's, you know, the city has evaluated where they need those impact fees, and they placed it where they felt was, you know, appropriate. And I think that's great and where it should be. I think for our development, they said if we have to submit for our building permits here in the next couple months, and if we can do that, then we would fall under the original impact fees. And if it goes past, then you know, it goes into the new impact fees. And so we're trying to accomplish that. I'm not sure if we can accomplish it, but I think it's kind of everyone's in the same boat of phased implementation of new costs is really what that is. Even though we might have been the most notable a development that, you know, that was questioned about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, local residents have been feeling that we're getting so much growth here that impact fees are important to try to offset some of the impacts of the growth.
Yeah.
I think that city council was reflecting that. Okay, well, I'm going to bring up another one that has come up in the course of discussion. I really got kicked off in that meeting in November. Before we get to the whole question of the RV park property. So I know that folks from the company met with the local sailing club members in this past year about the potential for Averill to take a dock at Windbag that might be used for hotel guests or owners. Has that formally been requested from the city? Or do you have a plan there for dock space at the Windbag?
No. So the hotel, all the way back to when the Cox family, senior Cox family, owned the property. They had an original dock there, and they gave that dock up, and the city was able to expand Marina Slips at Windbag Marina, and the Cox family has retained a couple slips that has been used for the Edgewater Hotel for years and years, and that's been going on for, you know, I'm not sure, for 20 plus years or more, and so those slips have just, we've used them ever since we've owned them as just slips for hotel guests and so on and so forth, and so we were just seeking to maintain those slips that we have. We did talk to the Sailing Association and said, how can we be a partner with you guys and what would be good for you guys and what went, and they came back and said, you know, we really enjoy what we have and we don't want to change anything. And we said, I get it. At the end of the conversation, we said, we get it. And we're here to, you know, we're your neighbor and we're here to help and support you. And we don't, if that's how you feel, that's fine. And that's kind of where we left it with them. You know, there's a number of folks in the Sailing Association and we want to be a good neighbor and community partner with them. I grew up sailing and loved the sport and if I could teach that to my kids, I'd be really, really happy about it, you know, and I don't want to impact them. They're worried about tacking lanes and distances between docks and buoys. And if that, you know, there might be a middle ground there between it, but I think without more discussion, it's hard to say. And today we're just happy with the slips that we have and they're useful and functional for the hotel. And so I think we're just trying to maintain the status quo of it.
Okay, well, let's get on to the most recent issue, and that is the proposal to buy or lease the RV park property that's across the street from the hotel. So the Averill Hospitality, with a letter from your dad, used the term that I think they've got people upset that the Sandpoint Lakeside Resort cannot move forward without a binding agreement that parcel would be reserved for parking in the marina, basically, to get rid of the RV park property. And of course, that was the subject of the city council meeting in November, and a lot of people, a few dozen, got up and spoke in opposition to providing a lease or purchase option to Averill of that property. So, you know, there is a public workshop coming up, and I guess, you know, what's next for Averill? What, besides additional vehicle or boat trailer parking, have you thought about alternative uses for that site that you think would complement the hotel?
You know, I think our communication and our intent was good, but I don't think us buying or leasing the property has any merit in the community. We don't. I stood up in front of city council and the community members that were concerned about it and said the same thing that you know, I understand what the letter said, but our our real intent behind it, if I could explain it, is that we want what the community wants for that land. And we hear a lot about alternative uses besides RV. We don't really know what that is. I was really happy to hear that the city was creating a survey and asking everyone's opinion in the community what they would like to see, and I think that's a wonderful approach, and we're happy to be a part of that and want to support it and recognize that the city has some financial needs that were tied to that property and what that was contributing to the city's budgets, and we came and I said that, you know, we want to see if we can help and participate financially to cover some of those gaps. We don't know if we can, but we're going to try to, and that's our intent. And so I think our motivations are still there, and we're going to participate in the workshop. And I'm really excited to hear what all the ideas are that the community comes up with for uses of that land. And my assumption is that they're going to be things that benefit the community as a whole, as City Beach is kind of the gem, you know, for the community, and it's such a beautiful access to the lake, and it's in such great proximity to downtown core that you know, there's lots of great uses that better serve than what it is today, and if we can help and be a part of that, and those things will have a benefit just from a proximity standpoint for the hotel, absolutely. But nevertheless, we are actively financially involved with all the communities that we're in, and how we can help and support those areas that of need that have a mutual benefit between us and our hotel property and the community or the city there, and so we view this as the same situation. So we're happy to participate, and so I think in the end it was, you know, it came about in a really maybe a little bit of a challenging way, but I think the where it's going is really positive and probably a good direction in the end of what came out of this all.
Well, actually, you know, one of the things that came out of it was at the city council meeting, the hearing where so many people got up and testified, a lot of them were like, leave the RV park there. But then the tide changed a little bit later in the testimony, and some were saying, well, you know, the actual plan for that property, even when it was acquired, before it was acquired, was to move boat trailer parking there away from the regular City Beach parking lot, and potentially even move the boat ramp there to remove that congestion from City Beach. So we're, you know, the workshop will be asking people, well, what do you prefer between those alternatives, an RV park and you know, more parking for boat trailers and to help that situation. But one of the things that also has happened just recently is the city got a $900,000 grant from the state to improve the existing RV park. And the city now is netting over $80,000 a year from the RV park. And, you know, if the council says that they don't want to move forward with the RV park renovation, but there's a chance that RV park will just sit there in its unimproved current form of the grant, if the council were to let that expire. So I guess the question would boil down, is Avril willing to chip in to help make up the funds that will be lost to the city from changing that from an RV park that generates money into more boat trailer parking or other kinds of parking?
Yeah, that's what, you know, that was what my message was at City Council, and it's still the same today, is that, you know, we understand that, you know, that $80,000 or whatever that number is important to the city, and it is an ongoing revenue source for them every year, and so we would be looking to participate in that, and if it goes to, you know, something that that benefits the community. That's our motivation. And there's a, like I was saying, there's a benefit to us as a property next door too. So it's a win-win, you know, from everyone's standpoint if something like that happens. And the, you know, that grant, it sounds like the city was checking on it, and I haven't heard what their final, but that grant might be able to be extended or postponed or evaluated at a later date too, which I don't know if they lose the opportunity anyways, or I think that they would want to take steps so they won't lose that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we are going to run out of time in just a minute or two, Brian Averill. I want to say thanks again for speaking with us. I guess my last question, and then I invite you to add any ideas you have. Do you feel like community trust has been affected by the events so far? And if you do, you know, how do you go about restoring community trust?
Well, thanks, Chris, for the opportunity to address that. We'll have to think about that and work on it. I think doing a project that has such a prominent site and an important site to the community and such an opportunity for the community, I think the onus of good communication is our responsibility, and I see that there's been a number of different areas along the way that we haven't done a great job of communicating. I know our intentions are really well served, and we are good stewards in the communities that we're involved in, and our intentions are there, and our actions with our how we provide good jobs and how we provide good guest experiences and how we support the communities and are those economic drivers that people want and look for in the hotels that we own, or all that's there. So I know the end result will be really, really good in the whatever the development turns out to be in Sandpoint, and invite, you know, where people have questions and concerns, and I'm always there to answer if I can, and we don't have all the answers along the way, but we can communicate what we know at the time, and as those things change over time, we can communicate more there. So I guess that would be my commitment is that I can communicate things as we know them better in the future. And they change, you know, they definitely change, but our motivations are always going to be about the same. So we'll be there for the community when someone's needed.
Mm-hmm. And again, that workshop, the community workshop on, you know, how best to use that RV park property is going to be December 13th, which is a Saturday, and it's at the James E. Bussell Event Center. And folks will be able to get more information on that, I'm sure. Well, Brian Averill, I want to say thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Well, you're very welcome. It's nice to talk to you, Chris.